This is Dr. Herbert Ebierle, Dean of the University of Healing in Campo, California. Our instant inspiration, birds of a feather flock together. How often have we heard this term, birds of a feather flock together, and what has it meant to us? Well, people of similar tastes are together. We were in the symphony concert group, Faith and I, in Newport Beach, and we were with other people in the symphony concert group, and we would sponsor symphony concerts for the Newport Costa Mesa area, and people who were in the group also liked to sponsor it and liked to bring fine musicians to the area. So dentists gather with dentists, and doctors gather with doctors, and tennis players gather with tennis players, and boxers gather with boxers, and intellectuals gather with intellectuals, and nerds of a feather flock together. and this is a very common thing in life. Now, what kind of a bird are you? With whom do you flock together? With whom do you gather and enjoy? Do you flock together with people who need help so that you can be helpful to them with your marvelous intellectual philosophy here of positive thinking? Are you the kind of person who likes to flock together with people who need help because you have studied psychology and philosophy and you can offer to them a new way of looking at life? Do you like to be with people who need help because then you can be a master of your trade of being a practitioner and have them make contributions to you? What is it that you as a bird are flocking together with? Think about it, really, what it is. Now, I'm going to take that a step further. Birds of a feather flock together. Whatever thoughts we have in our mind, we create other thoughts of that same area. And if we are tennis players, we notice all the tennis courts around the country. If you're not a tennis player, you're probably not even aware of it. If you're into baseball, you notice all the baseball diamonds, wherever they may be, and you are aware of them. And another person not interested in baseball wouldn't see them. Now, you have thoughts that pass through your mind. You have thoughts that are sexy, and you dwell upon them for a little while thinking, that's interesting. You have thoughts that are loving. And so then you're thinking of harmonious thoughts with other people and other things and other nations and so forth. I was mentioning the Buddhism philosophy centering in certain areas on sex. And Ingeborg mentioned, yes, when she was in Japan, she noticed that some of the Buddhist shrines were the sex symbol and the sex activity. This being something that is very dominant in an area of the religion, not the whole thing. Most of the monks who are Buddhist monks have agreed to have no sex, to be celibate. And yet they think about sex a great deal, like the two monks who were crossing a river, and one lifted a lady and carried her across the river, and then about an hour later, after he had set her down, the other monk said, we're not supposed to touch a woman. And the one monk said to the other, well, I put her down way back there. You're still carrying her. And he didn't say, you're still carrying her. He said, I put her back down way back there. And the intimation was that he was still carrying her. Why did he carry her in the first place when he didn't pick her up? Why did he have her as a thought in his consciousness? Well, he had it as a thought in his consciousness because that's what he was interested in. So many times we go into an area of philosophy and we take the philosophy of the law of cause and effect. And we say, we're going to learn to think thoughts that are beneficial to us. And so then we stub our toe. Ah, 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 ah. It hurts, it hurts, it hurts. And we know that we're putting a cause in motion for it to continue hurting and for it to be an unhappy toe. Whereas we have learned in our philosophy to say, I'm whole and perfect. The instant you stub your toe, I'm whole and perfect. All is in divine order. And then take your attention immediately and put it on something else. And you never have to experience the sadness that the toe would bring you. But we don't do that. We say, well, it's there, it hurts. Well, it doesn't have to. It hurts only because you put your attention on it. It hurts only because you have put the law of cause and effect on the hurt, saying the toe hurts. Because I stubbed it, whatever it may be, the toe hurts. Now, I told you the story about Star Trek, where this young man who was quite dominant, quite positive, an excellent leader, and he had many things in his head that were a secret, and he was taken into a spy ship. And in the spy ship, the woman was a very charming woman, very powerful woman. She was interrogating him. And so she said, please tell me what I want to know. Give me the secret information I want to know. He says, no. So then she said, put your hand in this box. He looked at the box, nothing to it. He put his hand in there. And then she told him, now take your hand out of the box. He couldn't. He could not remove his hand from the box. There's nothing holding it there. But he couldn't pull it out. Now she said, the box is going to get red hot, and your hand is going to turn into a cinder if you don't tell me what I want to know. He didn't. The box became red hot. It didn't become red hot. He thought it was red hot. So his hand was turning to a cinder. His hand was turning crisp, and there was no heat. It was his thought. She put that thought in his mind, and he dwelt upon it. So, after a period of time, no, he didn't tell. And he wouldn't tell. And his hand was being burned to a cinder. It was being burned to a crisp, not just ashes. And he wouldn't tell. And she realized he would not tell. So she said, okay, you may remove your hand from the box now. So he took his hand out of the box, normal. Not one bit of burn, not one bit of anything on it. It was all in his mind that she had put there. And she had put it there in a very logical way. And he held true to the fact of not telling the secret, because that was very important to him. He'd rather die than tell the secrets. And he passed that test very wonderfully. But she was not testing him for his company or his country. She was testing him for herself, trying to get the information that she wanted to get, using all the things. But, of course, you know the story of the wind and the sun. And they had an argument. Who's going to get this person to take off their coat? And so the wind says, I can get him to take off his coat. I'll blow and blow it and blow it right off him. And the sun said, go ahead. So the wind blew and blew, and the more he blew, the more tightly that he wrapped the coat around himself. So the sun says, okay, now it's my turn. So the sun just shined on the man, just shined on him, so wonderfully warm. And the man became very warm and very warm. So he took off his coat and he carried it. Now, there's a lesson there. The wind did what it was designed to do, to be blowy and cold, perhaps. And the sun did what he was designed to do, to be warm and friendly and charming. And because the sun was warm, the man with the coat took it off because he was getting warm too. Now, if we were to use our philosophical mind based upon what we know are the facts of life, we probably could do many miracles, and it wouldn't be a miracle at all. It'd just be the idea that we're exercising the wisdom of the wind blowing to take a man's coat off, and the sun shining to take a man's coat off. Which would be the more efficacious way of taking off the coat? The sun, of course. Because the sun merely shone upon the man, He got warm and took off his coat. He probably would have taken off his shirt and pants and everything else if it were that warm, you know. But the story doesn't talk about that. It just talks about taking off his coat. The argument between the wind and the sun. Who could get a man to take off his coat? So, you see, we're attracted. We're birds of a feather. We go into the areas that are important to us. We go into the areas of where our thinking is. And sometimes the area of where our thinking is not really the best in the world. And so in that area, we do things that we shouldn't do, mm-hmm. that are not beneficial to us. We associate with people who are not beneficial with us. Now, for instance, of what benefit is a banker? Nothing. He just does his job of handling money and handling transactions where people are willing to pay interest rates. Well, now, should we associate with bankers so that we'll have wealth? No. Bankers don't have wealth. Bankers have enough to live on. They have a good income, but they don't have wealth because their money is always calculated into where it's going to grow and do the best for itself. A person who is wealthy is a person who has money at his fingertips to do whatever he wants. He has a little jar in the kitchen, and in that he stuffs his change, his $1,000 bills and his $100,000 bills and stuff like that. That's his change. And whenever he has anything or anybody needs something, go out there and take whatever they want because it's always full. He's emptying out his pockets after a day's activities. And next day he's going to fill it again. And so if he does this every day, he would be two wealthy people, wealthy at home and wealthy on the job. But you're known by the company you keep. You're known by the birds of a feather flock together. So now, are you wealthy as a banker is wealthy who merely manages money? Or are you wealthy as a man is wealthy who goes off and spends it wherever he chooses to, has fun doing whatever he's doing, and delights in whatever life offers him? Which kind are you? Which kind of person are you? That's a very interesting thought, isn't it? We are the kind of person that does these things that we're trying to make things happen. Whereas if we would be with whoever is our ilk, if we'd be with whoever was our way of thinking, our mannerisms, we'd be much happier because we wouldn't be trying to pretend to be something. However, we would never go anywhere because if we are with our ilk, if we are with those of like thought, we're not going to get higher. We're going to just be with them. So you want to go and sit at the $1 million table. At the Board of Realtors, I told you, I sat at the table of those people who were making $1 million in sales every year. And I started to associate with them. And then my mind clicked. What makes them so successful? Well, it's just that they're dealing with larger items rather than lots of items. You can be a millionaire selling chewing gum by the stick. You can be a millionaire selling hay. You can be a millionaire not raising hay for the government. They want you not to raise hay on your property. You can be a millionaire making toothpicks or making matches, you know, but every little match counts. Or you can be a millionaire building jet airliners and selling jet airliners. One jet airliner is many millions, perhaps $1 billion, which is really something. And they have a new jet airliner now that is being considered by Boeing, and it is it has the same capacity as the largest airliner now, and it uses one-third less fuel, and it lands on all airports, even some of the smaller ones that don't handle the big planes. And the difficulty is that most of the passengers would not have a window seat because it is a like a boomerang. You know what a boomerang looks like? Australian boomerang. And across the middle of the V, it's all part of the plane. And so there just aren't that many windows there. But other than that, It's a fabulous plane. And Boeing is dickering over doing it because it feels it might not be publicly accepted as a plane. But the plane is more fuel efficient, it's more flight efficient, it's more time efficient, it has a few more mechanisms to it that operate it, but that's no problem. But they're like birds of a feather. They want to stick to the tried and true wings that are sticking out here on the side and the body that's traditional. This is more like a flying wing, but it's a great way to go. A great way to go. Will they achieve that? Newsweek, in their news article, recommends that they do, because it is a quantum leap over any of the previous planes that they have. And the hydrogen-oxygen fuel cell that they're creating, and then, of course, they have to create the car that will burn it, is going to be so much less expensive than the gasoline and the electric cars. So we'll see what comes in the manner of history when they start working on these things, because they're quite exciting. Quite exciting. But that's birds of a feather. New innovations are being thought of all the time by these companies, and they're putting into work. And we'll have them too, in no time at all. So, what kind of bird are you? Where are you flocking?
Paradise bird.
Then flock in a beautiful way and have miracles happen in your life. I love you. Have a good afternoon.